This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
That's our friend joining us on the Saitama Hotline. It's our buddy Joe Giglio at 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I am well, sir. I'm happy to hear your voice. Just trying to make sense of the ACC right now. I didn't see some of those things coming last night. I certainly didn't see Miami trouncing North Carolina. I should have seen Florida State winning in overtime yet again. I didn't see Clemson giving up 91. I mean, what really shocked you last night?
Well, I think the way that Carolina responded to Miami at the start of that game. This was a show-me week for the Tar Heels. They had the two games on the road, Miami and Wake Forest. This was a chance for them. You know, it's not often in our lifetimes, Scott, that North Carolina could feel disrespected, but I think coming into this week, you know, not being in the top 25, that could be something that could be used as a sign of disrespect. And, you know, at the risk of sounding like Jeff Bezdelic, you get respect by showing no respect. So you got to go out there and at least compete with Miami in that situation. And they did not. And that's alarming.
Yeah, I'm wondering how Hubert's going to get things back together with this. He was citing in his post-game interview no leadership. And those are all things you don't hear typically about a North Carolina team. Going forward, I mean, what should we expect? I mean, can you see this being a turning point for the Tar Heels? They make it work for them, or could it be a turning point in the opposite direction?
I think it's the other direction, because they should have learned this from their other losses. It should not have taken this game for them to wake up. And this is an effort. This is a defending question. This isn't a, do you have talent? Do you have whatever is at your means here at this point in the season? Your roster kind of is what it is. And they should know who they are at this point. I mean, that's kind of what would be the alarming part to me is, if you're in trouble at this point in the year, you should know who to turn to. Like, Carolina should turn to Armando Bacot. If you're in trouble at this point in the year, you should know basically how to play defense in the sense of what it's going to take to beat top-tier teams. And I said yesterday on my program, at some point you have to bank good wins. You're not going to get credit from the NCAA tournament committee for good losses. That's not how it works. You have to have good wins. And I even referenced the 2019 NC State team, which did not make the NCAA tournament because it didn't have enough good wins. And when you look at what Carolina's done this year, this week was a real opportunity to really get some of those good wins, because I don't know if you can count on beating Duke either time. And if you can't beat Duke and you start looking at their resume, you got to wonder, where are those good wins going to come? And last night was an opportunity for one of those good wins. And not only did they not get it, they got completely and totally embarrassed.
How much of this, and again, it goes back to identity. I agree with you 100%. A team needs to know who it is, what it is, who it wants to be. How much of this can we lay at the feet of Hubert Davis and his inexperience as a head coach?
I'll say this for the situation that Carolina's in. And it's an oversimplification, and I understand that. I think Hubert Davis is a regular coach. I don't know yet if he's going to be great. I don't know yet if he's bad. I think he's a lot like other coaches. Heck, let's put Steve Forbes in that group, right? Like, you're going to have a couple of good wins. You're going to have a couple bad losses. That makes you a regular coach. The exception, the problem for Carolina is they've had a Hall of Fame coach not only the last 18 years in Roy Williams, but basically 58 of the last 64 years when you go back to Dean Smith. So they're not used to regular. And that is where the Rubicon kind of moves on Hubert. He's a first-time coach, and he's going through it with a group, quite frankly, that I don't see an NBA player on that roster. I know some people think Bacot might be, or even Caleb Love. I don't see it, Scott. And if you don't have one of those guys or two of those guys, then you have to build a better mousetrap. And given where their roster is, yes, there is some continuity there, but they are counting on some new parts of Brady Manick and Dawson Garcia. If you can't count on that experience and continuity and you don't have NBA talent, well, you better have something. And usually the default for those types of teams is to play defense at a high level for extended periods. In Carolina, they didn't do that, and they haven't done that in their losses. And that's the troubling pattern that you're seeing for Hubert. I hope you don't take that, or anyone takes that, as an insult by calling him regular. That's all we know so far as a first-year coach. The standard at Carolina is a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, we saw this before with Matt Doherty, except the difference was Matt Doherty came out smoking hot and then ended up being exposed a couple years in. Right. You never want to be the guy who replaces the guy, and that's exactly what Hubert Davis is. It just was a little bit different than with Matt Doherty because they had that Bill Guthridge buffer, give Bill a job for a year, as a reward for his years of loyalty and all that, and because Dean stepped away at the 11th hour. But it's basically the same situation. The only difference is that Doherty came out smoking hot, and Hubert, we're still trying to figure out who he is.
I would agree with that. And I think there is a little bit more of a grooming process there for Hubert at the time that he spent with Roy. But if we've learned anything in the NFL from watching all of the lieutenants for Bill Belichick go out and fail on their own, it's that when you leave the master, if you will, the pupil doesn't always have that special sauce that the mentor has.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I was actually reading an article about how bad Belichick's coaching tree has been, but we'll talk about that another time. We're joined by Joe Giglio, 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. Follow him on Twitter, @Giglio_OG. Joe, here's a factoid you can use later today if you don't already have it. This one blew my mind. The last time that both North Carolina and Duke lost on the same day in the same state and not in the same building, January 3rd, 1942.
Wow.
Duke at Temple, UNC at St. Joe's. Now, they've lost in the NIT, same day, same state and all that, but that's a different breed of cat. That is, and that's in the same building. That is a startling number, and that tells you about the consistency, I guess, of those two programs, and it is kind of odd. You mentioned it earlier in this interview about North Carolina being disrespected, not being in the top 25. It's a different world out there, and it's really different when you consider it like this, Joe. The top of the ACC standings right now, dominated by Florida teams. I'm not going to say dominated, but they're at the top, Miami and Florida State.
Yeah, Miami is an interesting case study in college basketball in the sense that you might not need an NBA roster if you can be old. I don't know if Miami has a pro on their team, but they've got a couple of sixth-year guys. They've got fifth-year guys. They're old. And they went to Durham and beat Duke there. You look at what Duke did last night, and I thought Duke played really well under the circumstances. I just thought Duke is not quite ready, Scott, as freshmen and first-year players. They're not quite ready to understand that the only way into the NCAA tournament this year basically is to beat Duke. So when you're playing Florida State down there, guess what? the guys who scored for Florida State last night, I think his career high, he scored his career high. I think he had 3 points was his previous career high. Same thing kind of with Sam Wartenberg for Miami. Like, when these guys see Duke and Carolina, that's still the brand name. That's still going to resonate. And particularly in Duke's case, there are a lot of teams who are only going to get in by punching that golden ticket. And now we've seen Miami. Now we've seen Florida State. Don't forget, Florida State lost by 20 to Wake Forest. So I think college basketball is just basically drunk this season, and I think it's going to be that way going forward because of all of the turnover you see in rosters. And also, you're seeing more and more of the best players just skip college basketball altogether. I think the latest mock draft I saw, there was either 5 or 6 G League guys in the top 20 picks. You followed this long enough, Scott. You look around and you go, oh, well, the ACC must have 5 or 6 first-round picks. Well, Duke might have 3. Find me the other ones. You know, I've seen Blake Wesley out there a little bit from Notre Dame, but the league itself, it's down. And if you don't have those tippy top guys, you better have old guys. And I think Miami has that in the group that they have.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joe. I mean, I look at the college basketball landscape, and I'll contend that the SEC is probably the best conference in college basketball right now.
Yeah.
But the best individual players are in the Big Ten. It seems like to me, except for a scattering of guys here, there, you know, the Dukes of the world, at Kentucky. That one kills me. But the National Player of the Year candidates are few and far between in the ACC. To what do you attribute that, Joe? I mean, is it just a down year, or is this maybe the new norm going forward for the next 2, 3, 4 years?
I think it's the new norm, and I think you're seeing a seismic shift in college basketball. You mentioned Kentucky. Even Kentucky is starting a transfer from Davidson, a transfer from Georgia, and a transfer from West Virginia, right? So it's like there's only so many. Even Kentucky's basically given up on the one-and-done model. Think about that. They created it. And now Duke is the only one out here basically swimming in those waters. Are they going to be able to do that when Kay's gone? I don't know, because, again, if there's 12 good guys every year and 6 of them go to the G League and the other 6 decide to disperse instead of, you know, gathering at Kentucky, gathering at Duke, gathering at Kansas, well, you're seeing a more dispersion of top talent, right? Like Baldwin, the kid who's up playing for his dad in a directional Michigan school, or Wisconsin-Milwaukee, right? Like, how do you predict something like that? You can't. So it's interesting. I just think college basketball and the ACC as we know it. I honestly, Scott, I think the ACC as we know it ended in 2019 with Zion and Kobe White and that group, because that was the end of days before the pandemic. There were recognizable players in the league then. It was 3 number one seeds. And Virginia won the national championship. I think that was really the last year of the ACC as you and I kind of grew up and knew it and loved it.
Joined by Joe Giglio, 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. And, Joe, that's an interesting point. I mean, we talk about the transfer portal and the impact it has on college football, but obviously the impact on college basketball could be even more significant because it is a numbers game and you're only going to have 10 guys on a roster, and if you get 2 transfers in, presumably you're bringing them in because they're going to have a big impact. As far as the one and done, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, that's an NBA Players Association thing, right? That's not something that the NCAA or some conference or whatever can just strike off the books. That starts at the pro level. Am I wrong?
No, correct. The NBA and the NBAPA. And, you know, this is a great example of the NBA didn't want players out of high school. They didn't want to go, you know, scout players at the McDonald's game and all this stuff. And what ended up happening when you see a player, well, of course, there was LeBron James or Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, and people say, oh, well, one and done was, you know, you didn't need it. You can just go straight to the pros. The problem becomes when you don't have that supernova. Think about the exposure, even for Kevin Durant, right? He had an unbelievable season at Texas, which we don't really consider a basketball hotbed. But his brand and his awareness, people's awareness of who he was 100-fold if he had just come out of Maryland or out of Baltimore as a high school player. Doesn't mean he wouldn't have ended up being the same player, but you have to think of it in terms – it's the difference between the NFL draft and the NHL draft, right? Even if you don't follow hockey, even if you do follow hockey, who the heck are these guys in the NHL draft? In the NFL draft, everyone you see, you're like, oh, yeah, he played at Alabama. Oh, yeah, he played at Georgia. I know him. He played at Clemson. That's what the NBA wants. They want you to recognize the people who are coming into the league, and that's why they instituted the one-and-done rule.
I'm wondering, I mean, is it to protect maybe the players that are already in the league to make sure that they're not just pushed out year in and year out by these guys going straight from high school? Or is it also maybe a recruiting mechanism, or rather a scouting mechanism, that that gives them an opportunity to see these guys play 1 year in college? At least that's the way it's originally designed. They're going to the G League now. I mean, what is the intent of that?
I think you're exactly right. It's to see them in better competition. They want to see how they react a year kind of away from home too. You know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with the one and done concept. But what the NBA has figured out is these players aren't really getting what they should be getting out of the college experience. And if they don't want to go to college anyway, which, you know, Paolo Banchero is going to be at Duke for 9 months. Do we really think he's going to meet friends in his econ class that he's not taking, in the sense that, you know, major college athletes are so isolated from the rest of the student population, it's ridiculous. They're just really not given the chance to have the college experience. Those are the ones who are even interested in it. There's more of people out there who aren't interested in that and just want to play basketball. And the NBA figured out, we're better off teaching and developing players than college would be, because college basically cares about winning the tournament and winning games now, where they care about developing the player. And that was the whole premise of the G League and the whole premise of paying the players 2 years ago, starting to pay the players, you know, $150,000, $200,000 to come out of school, to come out of high school, instead of having the 1 year waylay in college.
Well, and before we let you go, Joe, here's something to consider. We talk about opting out with bowl games. Why aren't more guys opting out of seasons in college basketball? I think about Nerlens Noel, 10 years ago, he's the number one recruit coming out, destroys his knee, and it ends up costing him millions of dollars when he's eventually drafted in the NBA draft the following spring.
Yeah, I think that's what the G League is the ability to opt out. But I still think there is something to that exposure for those players, and I still think there is something to that experience of, you know, let's be honest, playing at Kentucky and Carolina and Duke and Kansas, and you're living a pretty good life now.
Yeah.
As opposed to riding the bus to Fort Wayne or being down at a training center in Orlando for 6 months. You know, there's a little bit different in the quality of your life there, and the quality of recognition, and being the guy walking down Franklin Street and everyone knowing who the hell you are. You know, I mean, there's something to be said for that. So I wish college basketball would kind of get with this college football type mentality of that name, image, and likeness is here, and let's just kind of strip away this pretense of, you know, the horns for hope or whatever the hell it is, and just let people, if they want to, let the market dictate their value. You know, I don't know what would be so awful about that.
He's Joe Giglio of 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. You can follow him on Twitter at Giglio_OG. Joe, buddy, appreciate you coming on this morning. Let's catch up soon.
All right, man. Be well. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, bud.
Appreciate you.
It's Joe Giglio, 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh, joining us